Now a logo appears in bold slanting letters over a green planet in space. Turner. In black and white film, a shield appears inscribed with the capital letters WB. Warner Brothers Pictures and executive producer Jack L. Warner present The Treasure of the Sierra Madre. This film is described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Described by Lisa Benjamin, Michael Braden, and Samantha Manahan. Read by Nick Mills. Funded by the U.S. Department of Education. Titles appear, starring Humphrey Bogart as Fred C. Dobbs, and Walter Houston, Tim Holt, Bruce Bennett, Barton McLean, Alfonso Bedoya. Screenplay by John Houston, based on the novel by B. Traven. Director of Photography, Ted B. McCord. Sound by Robert B. Lee. Musical Director, Leo F. Forbstein. Copyright 1948, Warner Brothers Pictures. Music by Max Steiner. Produced by Henry Blank. Directed by John Huston. Now a poster lists in Spanish the Mexican lottery's winning numbers for February 14th, 1925. The sunken-eyed Fred C. Dobbs tears up his ticket, glances wistfully at the posted 100,000 peso jackpot, and heaves a deep sigh. With a whiskered shadow of a beard, he wears a tattered fedora, a bandana around his neck, and carries a newspaper-wrapped bundle. Crossing a town square bustling with Mexican vendors, the shabbily dressed American strides down a covered sidewalk and grabs the arm of a lanky man.
Say, buddy, will you stake a fellow on...
The man shakes his head, tosses his cigarette in the street, and walks away. Dobbs eyes the smoking butt. A Mexican boy grabs it and strolls off, puffing smoke. With a disappointed frown, Dobbs strides on, picking up his pace to follow a man in a trim white suit.
Hey, Mexican, will you stake a fellow American to a meal?
Clenching a cigar in his teeth, the rakish American puts a peso in Dobbs' dirty palm. Later, Dobbs sits at a bar.
Ochentos centavos. Ochentos centavos.
Dobbs puts a coin on the counter, lights his cigarette, and exhales a stream of smoke. A round-faced Mexican boy approaches, carrying sheets of paper.
Big lottery, senor?
Beat it. I ain't buying no lottery tickets. Go on, beat it.
4,000 pesos, the big price.
Get away from me, you little beggar.
The boy shrinks back.
The whole ticket is only 4 pesos. It's a sure winner.
I ain't got 4 pesos.
Buy a quarter of a ticket for 1 peso silver.
If you don't get away from me, I'm going to throw this water right in your face.
The boy flinches and moves to Dobbs' other side.
Then 1/10 of a ticket, senor. For 40 cents.
Dobbs throws the glass of water at him.
Senor, I'll buy 1/20. 1/20 costs you only 20 centavos. Look, senor, add the figures up. You get 13. What better number could you buy? It's a sure winner.
Well, how soon's the drawing?
Only 3 weeks off.
Well, give me a 20th so they don't have to look at your ugly face.
It's un número excelente, senor. Gracias. Come again next time. I always have the winners. All the lucky numbers. Good luck.
The boy leaves.
13.
Dobbs taps the ash off his cigarette, grabs his coat and bundle, and leaves the bar. Later, he strolls through a park where a 30-ish man sleeps on a bench. Dobbs trips over the fellow's outstretched foot.
Excuse me.
The scruffy-faced fellow peers under the wide brim of his cowboy hat at Dobbs, then closes his eyes. Dobbs wipes off a nearby bench and sits down.
Cigarette?
The fellow sits up and slides closer.
Thanks.
He takes one.
It's hot.
Yeah.
Sweat gleams on their unshaven faces. Dobbs lights his cigarette, then passes the fellow his matches.
What a town. Tampico.
You said it, brother. If I could just get me a job that would bring in enough to buy a passage, I'd shake its dust off my feet soon enough, you bet.
Yeah. Well, if I was a native, I'd get me a can of shoe polish and I'd be in business. I'd never let a gringo. Sit on a bench till you're three-quarters starved. You can beg from another gringo. You can even commit burglary. You try shining shoes in the street, peddling lemonade out of a bucket, and your hash is settled. You'll never get another job from an American.
Yeah, and the natives would hound and pester you to death.
Some town to be broke in.
The town isn't.
Dobbs walks to a shoeshine stand where the white-suited American reads a paper.
You just take a fellow American to a meal?
Dobbs stares at the ground and shifts his weight uncomfortably. The American takes a peso from his pocket, hands it to Dobbs, and reads on. He lowers his paper and glances keenly at Dobbs. Dobbs walks away, not noticing. In a barber shop, Dobbs lies back in a chair while a mustached barber trims his nose hairs, then unwraps a towel from around his head. The barber splashes Dobbs' clean-shaven face with aftershave, fans him with a towel, and powders his chin. Dobbs stretches his lips. Sitting the chair up, the barber takes a comb from his own hair, slicks back Dobbs' jet-black hair with careful, steady strokes, and then proudly winks. Raising his eyebrows, Dobbs checks the neat fade at the back of his hair with a hand mirror, nods to the barber in approval, and pays him. Dobbs studies his hard-featured reflection in a wall mirror. Admiring himself, he licks his fingers and smooths his dark eyebrows. The barber hands him his change. Dobbs grabs his tattered fedora and coat, tucks his bundle under his arm, then steps outside into the afternoon sun. Donning his hat, he knits his brow in puzzlement as the brim dips over his eyes. He wiggles the oversized hat on his head, then takes it off. A shapely Mexican woman sashays past, flashing Dobbs a brief glance. With his eyes fixed on her trim figure, he follows, chewing a toothpick. She looks over her shoulder at him, then strides into a hotel. The white-suited American strolls by Dobbs, puffing a cigar.
Hey, mister. Will you stick a fellow American to a meal?
Such impudence never came my way.
Early this afternoon, I gave you money. While I was having my shoes polished, I gave you more money. Now you put the bite on me again. Do me a favor, will you? Go occasionally to somebody else. It's beginning to get tiresome.
Oh, excuse me, mister. I never knowed it was you. I never looked at your face. I just looked at your hands and the money you gave me. Beg pardon, mister. I promise I'll never put the bite on you again.
This is the very last you get from me. Just to make sure you don't forget your promise, here's another peso.
Thanks, mister. Thanks.
But from now on, you have to make your way through life without my assistance.
Dobbs rolls the coins over in his palm, then stuffs them in his pocket. Nighttime. Outside a cantina, he approaches a man in a cowboy hat.
Hey, buddy. You take a fellow American to a meal?
I won't give you a red cent. If you want to make some money, I'll give you a job.
Now, what's the catch?
Well, there's no catch. I got a job for you if you want it. It's hard work, but good pay. You ever rig a camp?
Sure.
Well, the ferry's making off. One of my men hasn't showed up. I don't know what's happened to him. He's probably filthy drunk at some dive.
What's the pay?
$8 American a day. Well, don't just stand there. Make up your mind. The ferry doesn't wait.
I'm your man.
Come on.
Dobbs and the contractor leave, stepping down a dimly lit stairwell. Later, they stride past stacks of raw timber and join a crowd of workmen on a dock. Dobbs stands next to Curtin, the scruffy-faced fellow he met earlier in the park.
Hello there. Hello yourself.
Okay, you guys, get aboard.
The waiting workmen file onto a flatbed ferry. Harbor lights glimmer on the still black water. Daytime. On top of a half-built oil derrick, Curtin passes a wooden crossbeam to Dobbs. Tightly gripping the corner post, Dobbs hammers the beam into place. On the ground, a cook rings a triangle. Gripping a rope with their hands and feet, Dobbs and Curtin slide four stories down to the base of the derrick. Dust sticks to their sweat-stained shirts. They wear denim overalls with bandanas tied around their necks. The cowboy-hatted contractor, McCormick, waits for them.
What's the matter with you two? Can't you take it?
Well, it's 130 in the shade, and there ain't any shade up there on that derrick.
Well, just figure you're a couple of millionaires in your own private steam bath. And the sooner we're through, the sooner we'll be back in town drinking cold beer. We finish within 2 weeks. I'm giving you fellas a bonus.
Yeah, well, it's coming to us working 16, 18 hours a day like we do.
Nah, don't go crying to your mamas. What do you want? I'm paying top salaries and a bonus.
How about our pay anyway, and when do we get it? I ain't seen a buck out of you yet, Pat.
Ah, you'll get your dough, all right. Don't worry about that. When we get back to Tampico, what could you do with money out here anyway except gamble and lose it? You'll be paid as we step off the ferry.
Later in Tampico Harbor, the flatbed ferry, carrying the construction workers, pulls slowly up to the marina. On the dock, a longshoreman opens a gate. Pat McCormick steps off the boat and glances around the empty pier. Pursing his brow, he reaches into his coat and takes out a pocket watch as Dobbs, Curtin, and 20 other employees cluster around him.
That agent was supposed to be here with the dough. Don't know what could have happened. There's nothing to worry about, though. I'll go over to the office and pick up the money myself. You men stay here.
Hey, Pat, any objection to a couple of us coming along with you?
What's the matter? Don't you trust me? You think I'd run out on you?
Oh, no, Pat, I don't think you'd do a thing like that, but I ain't got a cent, not even enough to buy me a glass of beer.
Pat gives him some cash.
Say, you two guys meet me over at the Cantina Madrid. It's a quarter of two now, and I'll be over there no later than 3 o'clock.
At 7 o'clock, Dobbs and Curtin still wait at the Cantina Madrid.
Pat McCormick, see, he come in from time to time. I don't see him lately.
Pat McCormick? What about Pat McCormick?
He's supposed to meet us here.
Does he owe you any money?
Yeah.
Say, how long you guys been around Tampico anyway?
Well, what's that got to do with it?
Only foreigners and half-baked Americans fall for McCormick's tricks.
How do you mean?
I mean he hires dumb guys like you to work for him. When it comes time to pay off, he takes a powder.
Curtin exchanges a grim look with Dobbs.
How much we got left of that 10 he gave us, Dobbsy?
250.
Not even enough for one bet.
I know a joint is full of rats, scorpions, and cockroaches. The cots are only 50 centavos a night.
Out of beer, Dobbs frowns. Later, at the El Oso Negro Flophouse. At the front desk, a mustached man hands Dobbs and Curtin each a pillow and blanket. They pass a group of men chatting in the lobby, then choose two cots next to an old man with a scruffy white beard.
Jobs for a dime a dozen ain't to be had at all. The streets are full of guys pushing each other.
Going to Mexico? Why, sure there is. Not 10 days from here, Berea and pack train at the mountain waiting for the right guy to come along, discover a treasure, and then tickle it, just let them have it. Question is, are I the right guy? Real bonanzas are few and far between to take a lot of finding. Say, answer me this, will you? Why is gold worth some 20 bucks an ounce?
I don't know. Because it's scarce.
1,000 men say go searching for gold. After 6 months, one of them's lucky. 1 out of 1,000. This find represents not only his own labor, but that of 999 others to boot. That's 6,000 months or 500 years, scrabbling over mountains, going hungry and thirsty. Now, the gold, mister, is worth what it is because of the human labor that went into the finding and the getting of it.
Never thought of it just like that.
Well, there's no other explanation, mister. Gold itself ain't good for nothing except for making jewelry with gold teeth. gold's a devilish sort of a thing anyway. You start out, you tell yourself you'd be satisfied with 25,000 handsome swaggers worth of it. So help my lord and cross my heart. Fine resolution. After months of sweating yourself dizzy and growing short on provisions and finding nothing, you finally come down to 15,000, then 10. Finally, you say, Lord, let me just find $5,000 worth and never ask for anything more the rest of my life.
$5,000 is a lot of money.
Yeah, here in this joint seems like a lot, but I tell you, if it was to make a real strike, you couldn't be dragged away. Not even the threat of miserable death would keep you from trying to add 10,000 more. 10, you'd want to get 25. 25, you'd want to get 50. 50, 100, like roulette. One more turn, you know, always one more.
It wouldn't be that way with me. I swear it wouldn't. I take only what I set out to get. Even if there's still $500,000 worth lying around waiting to be picked up.
I've dug in Alaska and Canada and Colorado. I was with the crowd in the British Honduras where it made me fare back home and almost enough over to cure me of the fever I'd caught. Dug in California and Australia, all over the world practically. Yeah, I know what gold does to men's souls.
Talk as though you struck it rich sometime or other, Pop. How about it?
Pop chuckles at the bun.
And what are you doing in here, a down and outer?
That's the gold. That's what it makes us. Never knew a prospector yet that died rich. Make one fortune, sure to blow it in trying to find another. I'm no exception to the rule. sure, I'm an odd old bone now, but say, don't you guys think the spirit's gone? I'm all set to shoulder a pickaxe and a shovel anytime anybody's willing to share expenses. I'd rather go by myself. Going it alone is the best way. But you gotta have a stomach for loneliness. Some guys go nutty with it. On the other hand, going with a partner too is dangerous. Murder's always lurking about. Partners accusing each other of all sorts of crimes. As long as there's no fine, the noble brotherhood will last. But when the piles of gold begin to grow, that's when the trouble starts.
Curtin eyes Pop.
Me now, I wouldn't mind a little of that kind of trouble.
I think I'll go to sleep. Dream about piles of gold getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Glancing at Dobbs, Pop chuckles. The next day, Curtin and Dobbs sit in the park.
Do you believe what that old man who was doing all the talking at the Oso Negro said the other night about gold changing a man's soul so he ain't the same kind of a guy as he was before finding it?
Guess it all depends on the man.
That's exactly what I say. Gold don't carry any curse with it. It all depends on whether or not the guy who finds it is the right guy. The way I see it, gold can be as much of a blessing as a curse.
Hey, Hobbsy.
Yeah?
Look who's coming out of the Hotel Bristol. Is that Pat McCormick, or am I seeing things?
McCormick strolls down the sidewalk, escorting the shapely woman.
It's him.
Let's get him.
Let's get him hard.
Why don't you and me go and buy me shopping things, huh? For instance, I could use a new pair of shoes, zapatos, and then I would...
Hello, fellas. How are you? I'm glad to see you. Mr. Dobbs and Mr. Curtin, Senorita...
Lopez.
Oh, yeah, Lopez. I want you fellas to come and have a drink with me. Perdona, mi vida. I have some business to attend to with these gentlemen. You go back up the hotel and wait, huh? I won't be long. Unos minutos. No mas, chiquita.
Okay.
Well, fellas, let's have that drink, huh? Where you been keeping yourselves? I've been looking all over for you.
McCormick pats their shoulders as they enter the cantina and stand at the bar.
Three shots of rye.
Take mine, brandy. Three stars.
Two brandies. Rye's good enough for me. Well, boys, I suppose you're wondering about that money that's coming to you. The fact is, I haven't been paid off on that contract yet myself. If I had the money, you'd get it first thing, you know that. I'll put you both on my next contract. It'll come through by Monday, and we can set out Friday. Here's mud in your eye.
McCormick raises his glass, then downs his rye.
We want what's coming to us, and we want it right here and now.
Well, didn't I just get through telling you that?
Better come across, Pat.
Well, boys, I tell you what I'll do. I'll give you 25%. I guess I can make it 30%. And the balance, say, the middle of next week, huh?
Nothing doing right here and now. Every cent you owe us, or you won't walk out of here. You'll have to be carried out.
Oh, now, let's don't stop being friends. How about another drink? Two more brandies for the gentleman. Put the bottle on the bar.
Have you got any ideas about getting us liquored up?
Oh, no. I'm just inviting you to have a friendly drink with me.
He pours Dobbs a brandy, smashes Curtin's face with the bottle, and punches Dobbs. On the floor, Curtin grabs McCormick's knees. The well-dressed contractor kicks him off. Dobbs spins McCormick around and punches him. McCormick blocks his third blow and slugs Dobbs to the floor. As Dobbs gets to his knees, McCormick kicks him in the face. Curtin lunges at McCormick again. The contractor knees Curtin and knocks him across the cantina. Blood drips from Dobbs' lip. From behind, he wraps his arms around McCormick's knees. Still standing, McCormick pummels Curtin with punches. Two observing Mexicans calmly sip their drinks. Dobbs pins McCormick against the bar and slugs him toward his buddy. Curtin clubs him, sending him sliding down the bar. McCormick pendulums between the hard punches of his two employees, then falls to the floor. Grabbing the bruised contractor by the hair, Curtin clubs him. On his hands and knees, McCormick crawls away. Dobbs puts his boot heel on the debtor's back and pushes him to the floor.
I'm rich, boss. I'm rich.
Give us our money.
Yeah, give us our money.
McCormick takes a cash-filled billfold from his jacket.
I can't see.
Dobbs grabs the cash, tosses the billfold at McCormick, and counts the money.
50, 100, 200, 300. That's it, ain't it, Kurt?
Yeah, that's it.
Dobbs throws the rest of the cash at McCormick.
Let's beat it before the law arrives.
Hurrying, Dobbs gives the bartender some money.
It's for the drinks and the use of the cantina.
Later at the water fountain in the park, Dobbs and Curtin wash their cut, bearded faces.
You know something, Kurt?
What?
We ain't very smart, hanging around Tampico waiting for a job. Money's getting shorter every day, and pretty soon we're right back where we were, on the bum again. Pushing guys for dimes and sleeping around in freight cars.
That's right. Got any ideas?
Yeah. That old man in the Oso Negro started me to thinking.
What about?
Well, why not try gold digging for a change? Well, ain't he risky than waiting around here for a break? And this is the country where the nuggets of gold are just crying for you to take them out of the ground. Make them shine in coins on the fingers and necks of swell dames.
One thing, living in the open's cheaper than it is here in Tampico. Our money would last longer.
Sure, and the longer it lasts, the greater our chance of digging something up would be. We'd have to have equipment, all right. Picks and spades, pans, burrows. Wonder how much it would all cost.
Well, that old man would know.
Yeah, he could give us some pointers, all right. He's too old to take along with us, of course. We'd have to pack him on our backs.
You can't tell about some of those old guys. It's surprising sometimes how tough they are. I don't know what gold looks like in the ground. I've only seen it in jewelry store windows and people's mouths. You know anything about prospecting?
Not much when you come right down to it.
We might have real use for an experienced guy like that old-timer.
Let's go hunt him up right away.
Later, in El Oso Negro with Howard, the old man.
Will I go? Well, what a question. Of course I'll go. Any time, any day. I was only waiting for one or two guys to ask me. Out for gold? Always at your service. I got 300 American bucks ready cash here in the bank. 200 of them all set to invest. The last money got in the world, and that's gone. I'm all finished up. But if you don't take a risk, can't make a gain. How much dough you guys got to put in?
I got 150 bucks, and Curtin here's got the same.
500 bucks ain't hardly enough to buy the tools and weapons and essential provisions.
Weapons? What do we need weapons for?
Meat's one thing and bandits another. Bandit country's where we'd be going. You ought to have 600 bucks between us.
Well, that much, eh?
Can't you dig up any more?
Not a red cent.
Senor!
The round-faced boy.
Senor! Give me my money, senor! 10% I get for selling the winning ticket.
Get away from me, will you?
Oh, please, senor. Whoever draws the lucky number always gets a present to the seller of the ticket.
I tell you, I don't want any lottery ticket.
You don't. You have bad luck the rest of your life.
Wait a minute. What'd you first say?
Well, he's trying to tell you he sold you the winning ticket.
Dobbs digs the ticket out of his pocket.
Hey, wait a minute. Is this what you mean?
Si, senor.
You say it's a winner?
Si, a 200 peso prize.
Where?
3721.
Hey, that's my number.
Sure enough. Oh, just look at that fat, rich, printed number. That's the kind of sugar Papa likes. Oh, 200 pesos. Welcome, sweet little smackaroos. Here, son, here's a present for you with my blessing.
Muchas gracias, senor.
Well, would you like to shake the hand that bought that ticket?
Congratulations.
Congratulations yourself. You stand a profit out of this the same as I do.
Well, how do you make that out?
Well, didn't he just say we needed 600 bucks? Well, that's what we got now, ain't it?
Yeah, but...
But what?
Well, how come you're putting up for me?
Well, this is an all-or-nothing proposition, ain't it? If we make a find, we'll be lighting our cigars with $100 bills. If we don't, the difference between what you put up and what I put up ain't enough to keep me from being right back where I was this afternoon, polishing a bench with the seat of my pants. Put her there, Pod.
They shake hands. Howard eyes them both. Daytime, in the desert, a train billowing coal smoke rolls down a track. In a crowded car, Dobbs, Curtin, and Howard sit together.
The fire burns here at Pearland, then head northwest away from the railroad. No use looking anywhere nearby a railroad or any kind of road at all, for that matter, because construction engineers make it their business to examine every bit of ground around the road while they build them. We got to go where there's no trails at all, where you can be positive, but no surveyor, anybody who knows anything about prospecting has ever been there before. Best place for those who... Anybody who works on a salary wouldn't go because he wouldn't think it was worth his while to risk his hide.
The train comes to an abrupt jolting stop. Passengers duck. Howard looks out the window. Descending from the hills, armed Mexican bandits on foot and horseback race toward the train. He and Curtin grab pistols from a suitcase. The shooting bandits near. Ducking by an open window, Dobbs, Curtin, and Howard fire at them. A shot man falls to his knees. Six bandits on horseback spread out. Sweat beads on Howard's forehead as he narrows his aiming eyes and shoots a rider. Inches from Dobbs, a bullet tears into the window frame. Passengers cower in their seats behind the American defenders. A Mexican woman strokes her daughter's hair in comfort. As Howard reloads, the train starts to move. A mustached bandit gallops alongside the speeding train, shooting. He wears a wide-brimmed sombrero and bandoliers crisscrossed on his chest. The three men fire at him but miss. Headed off by the sloping hillside, the hatted bandit slows his horse.
I got three of them. Credit me with three. How many did you get?
A couple, I guess.
I'm one up on you. I better get more than you did, Pop. I got three. Nice shooting, eh? Hey, look at that bullet hole, about 2 inches from where my head was. That was close, eh?
Well, the bullets were sure flying thick and fast in here for a minute. Sound like there was a swarm of bees in this coach.
The bandit with the gold hat that rode alongside the train. I had my sights on him nice as you please. The train gave a jolt and I missed him.
Sure wish I'd got him.
Hold her on the track. So train stop. Bandits get big surprise because soldiers on the train waiting for them. Not many passengers get killed.
Now here's where bombs were hereabouts. Don't show properly where there's mountain, swamp, or desert. That shows the makers of the map themselves don't know for sure. Now, once on the ground, all we got to do is open our eyes and look around. Yeah, and blow our noses, too. Believe it or not, I knew a fellow once who could smell gold like a jackass can smell water.
Later in a town. Howard selects burros from a rancher who affirms each choice to a scribe.
Una A con una media luna arriba. Ese lo mismo. Una A con una media luna arriba. Este otro igual. Este también igual.
The scribe copies down the A-shaped brand of each burro on a contract. Now the rancher talks to Dobbs.
Oigan, por ese rumbo que ustedes llevan, a 5 días de jornadas de aquí, hay un río muy caudaloso en verano, pero seco en invierno. Y más allá, hay montañas tan altas como las nubes. El terreno es muy peligroso. Hay que abrirse paso a machete.
What's all that about?
We're going, the country's very wild and dangerous. Have to cut our way through jungles and climb mountains so high they rise above the clouds. The tiger is so big and strong they can climb trees with burrs in their mouths. Good. Glad to hear such tall tales, because that means mighty few outsiders have ever set foot there. Well, let's get going.
Watching Howard as he prepares his burrow for travel, Curtin and Dobbs each do the same to their burrows. They put a saddle pad down and a woven blanket with a girth on top of it. A Mexican boy stops Dobbs. The boy turns the blanket around. Dobbs smiles as the boy helps him straighten it. Later in the desert mountains, Howard, Curtin, Dobbs, and their four burros climb a steep slope. Two gullies cut into the scrub-covered hillside border their narrow dirt trail. On a hilltop, Howard hikes briskly, passing flowering bushes and cacti. 50 yards behind him, Curtin pants as he plods wearily up the hill, leading a supply-loaded burro by its halter. Dobbs follows, prodding a burro up the slope with a stick. The two men, their shirts soaked with sweat, wear their hats low to shield their faces from the intense desert sun.
Hey! There was gold in them mountains. How long would it have been there? Millions and millions of years, wouldn't it? What's our hurry? A couple of days, more or less, ain't gonna make any difference.
They sit.
Remember what you said? Black and Tan Pico about having to pack that old man on our backs?
Dobbs swigs from a canteen, spits, then passes it to Curtin.
That was when I took him for an ordinary human being, not part goat. Look at him climb, will you?
Sure-footed, Howard strides up a rocky, brush-wooded hillside.
What gets me is how he can go all day long in the sun without any water.
Maybe he's part camel, too.
I'd known what prospecting meant. I stayed in Tampico and waited for another job to turn up.
Dobbs crouches over a rock and slides his fingers along its rough, gilt-speckled surface.
Hey, what's the matter?
Look.
Curtin rushes over.
Look at the glitter. It's yellow, too, like
gold.
Gold.
Howard! 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 Come back! We found something!
Hey, look! Hey, look, Curt! Here's a vein of it here in this rock!
Dobbs pours water on the rock.
Look here. Look, it's all around. Oh, what else could it be? When the gold shines and glitters like that. Struck it, Curt.
Dobbs douses another sparkling rock.
Look. By the looks of things, struck it rich. Look, it's all over here.
Maybe we've got a what do you call
a mother load.
Say, Howard, Howard.
Come on, look. Here. Look at this rock. It's full of gold. Veins of it. Stuff wouldn't pay you dinner for a carload.
What, ain't gold? Pyrites.
Fool's gold.
Oh, not there ain't plenty of the real stuff hereabouts. We walked over it 4 or 5 times. The place yesterday that looked like rich diggings, but the water for washing the sand was 11 miles away, too far. And the other places, well, there wasn't enough gold to pay us a good day's wages. Hey, next time you fellas strike it rich, holler for me, will you, before we start flashing water around. Water's precious. Sometimes it can be more precious than gold.
Later, a dust storm sweeps across a valley. Engulfed by swirling sand, the three men trudge across the barren flatland. Howard's stubborn burro stops.
What's up?
Norther, looks like.
A norther? What's a norther?
Big winds from the north this time of year. When they blow hard, the desert country stands right up on its hind legs.
Later, in a densely wooded forest, Howard leads the way, thrashing through tangles of palms and shrubs.
I reckon there's only a few more miles of this heavy stuff. Pretty soon we'll be out of this valley.
With a machete, he slashes at the tangled branches of a thicket. Yanking a reluctant burrow along, Curtin breathes heavily as he follows Howard's blazed trail. Dobbs trips and falls to his knees. In the lead, the white-bearded Howard hacks a dead branch out of the way and continues to slice through the twisted vines. Later, rain drips from the dense growth. Clenching his teeth, Dobbs plods down the trail with weary, staggering steps. Nighttime. Curtin and Dobbs lie sound asleep by a campfire. Howard eats hungrily.
Hey, you fellas, how about some beans?
He shovels food into his mouth.
You want some beans?
Dobbs and Curtin don't move.
Going to some minor up country tomorrow. You better have some beans.
He takes one last bite, sets his plate down, and stretches his legs. Wiping his mouth, he takes a harmonica from his shirt pocket. Daytime. In a sandy clearing, Howard crouches, studying a handful of pebbles. The sweat-soaked Dobbs staggers up a hill toward him, lies on the ground, and lays his weary head on his arm. The burros stand still. Breathing heavily, Curtin arrives, takes a seat on a nearby rock, and hangs his head between his knees.
You know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking we ought to give up. Leave the whole outfit. Everything behind, and go back to civilization.
What's that you say? Go back? Well, tell my old grandmother. I got two very elegant bedfellows who kick at the first drop of rain and hide in the closet from thunder rumbles. My, what great prospectors. Two shoe clerks reading the magazine about prospecting for gold in the land of the midnight sun, south of the border or west of the Rockies.
Dobbs grabs a rock.
Trap. Shut up, Ross. Smash your head flat.
Go ahead. Throw it. If you did, you'd never leave this wilderness alive. Without me, you two would die here more miserable than rats.
I'll leave him alone.
Can't you see that the old man's nuts?
Nuts! Nuts, am I? Let me tell you something, my two fine bedfellows. You're so dumb, there's nothing to compare you with. You're dumber than the dumbest jackass. Look at each other, will you? Do you ever see anything like yourself for being dumb specimens?
Howard dances.
You're so dumb, you don't even see the riches you're treading on with your own feet.
Curtin and Dobbs exchange a dumbfounded look, then drop to their knees and search the sand.
Yeah, I don't expect to find nuggets of molten gold. It's rich, but not that rich. And here ain't the place to dig. It comes from someplace further up there. Up there's where we got to go. Up there.
Later, on the mountain, Howard swirls water over a handful of gold in a mining pan.
Is that it?
That's it, all right.
The gold, I mean. It sure don't look like I thought it would.
It's not much different than sand.
Yeah, it's just like plain sand. It don't glitter. I thought it would glitter.
Oh, it'll glitter when it's refined. That's some other guy's job. All we got to do is mine it and get it back there. You know, gold ain't like stones in the riverbed. It don't cry out to be picked up. No, you got to know how to recognize it. And find it ain't all, not by a long shot. You got to know how to tickle her so she'll come out laughing. Yeah, it's mighty rich. It'll pay good.
How good?
Oh, about 20 ounces a ton.
It's on $20 an ounce. How many tons can we handle a week?
Depends on how hard we work. We better pitch our camp down the mountainside a bit.
Why do that when the digging's up here?
In case anybody happens by, we can tell them we're hunters and get away with it, maybe.
Wouldn't it be easier to file a claim?
Well, easier maybe, but not so profitable. Wouldn't be no time till an emissary from one of those big mining companies would be up here with a paper in his hand showing we had no right to be here. Well, how does it feel, you fellas, to be men of property?
Later, the three miners work at a wooden sluice channel that separates gold from dirt.
It takes a week, some at first, till the boards begin to swell and close the seams.
Dobbs shovels gravel into a wooden trough.
Yeah, I sure had some cockeyed ideas about prospecting for gold. It was all in the finding, I thought. I thought all you had to do was find it, pick it up, put it in sacks, and carry them off to the nearest bank.
Now, you're learning. Pretty soon I won't be able to tell you a thing. Tank full yet?
Right to the top.
Open the sluice gate.
Up the hill, Curtin slides open a door on a boulder-sized wooden water barrel. Attached to the barrel, a dozen wooden troughs, sluice boxes, are connected in a line and lead down a gently sloping hill. Water gushes out of the sluice gate on the tank and runs down the man-made channel over the gravel and gold mixture in the sluice boxes. At a large collection trough, Howard, Curtin, and Dobbs sift through the wet gravel and gold with their bare hands. Nighttime at camp. In their canvas tent, Dobbs and Curtin watch Howard weigh the granular gold on a makeshift beam scale made with sticks.
How much do you figure it to be now?
Oh, about $5,000 worth of reckon.
Dobbs smokes a cigarette.
When are we going to start dividing it up?
Howard glances shrewdly from Dobbs to Curtin.
Anytime you say.
What's the use of dividing it at all? I don't see any point. We're all going back together when the time comes. Well, I'll wait until we get paid for the stuff and then just divide up the money.
Either way suits me. You fellas decide.
I'm for dividing it up as we go along. Make each guy responsible for his own goods.
I reckon I'd just soon have it that way. I haven't liked the responsibility of guarding your treasure any too well.
Well, who asked you to?
That's right. You never asked me. Only I thought I was the most trustworthy of the three.
You? Huh. How come?
Well, I said the most trustworthy, as far as being the most honest. No one can say.
I don't get you.
All right, suppose you're charged with taking care of the goods. One day I'm deep in the brush and Curtin's on his way to the village to get provisions. That'd be your big chance to pack up and leave us in the cold.
Only a guy that's a thief at heart would think me likely to do a thing like that.
Yeah, right now, it wouldn't be worth your while, but when the pile has grown, say, to 300 ounces, well, think of such things you will.
How's about yourself?
Oh, I'm not quick on my feet any longer. You fellas are a lot tougher than when we started out. By the time the pile has grown, well, to be really tempting, I won't be able to run half as fast as either of you. You'd get me by the collar and string me up in no time. That's why I think you're the most trustworthy of the outfit.
Looking at it that way, I guess you're right. But maybe it would be a good idea to cut the proceeds up three ways every night. It'd relieve you of a responsibility you don't like.
Swell by me. After we say we've got a couple of 100 ounces, it'll be a nuisance carrying little bags hanging from our necks. And each of us will have to hide his share of the treasure from the other two. And having done so, he'll have to be forever on the watch that his hiding place is not discovered.
What a dirty, filthy mind you got.
Oh, no, not dirty. Not dirty, baby. Only I know what kind of ideas even supposedly decent people get when gold's at stake. All right. Here she goes three ways.
Curtin and Dobbs fix watchful gazes on Howard's hands as he pours gold into a scale pan. He balances it with a weighted tray that hangs on the other side of a stick. Curtin holds a 2-pound sack open while Howard pours the measured gold into it. Clenching a cigarette between his teeth, Dobbs watches hawkishly. Eyeing Dobbs, Howard carefully spoons gold into the empty pan until it levels with the other, then pours it into a sack. Daytime. Inside a mine tunnel, Dobbs clenches his teeth and slams the rock wall with a pickaxe. Dragging a loaded wooden sled, Curtin hauls rock out of the lantern-lit tunnel into the bright sun. He drags it to the sluice boxes. Howard passes, leading a water-carrying burrow downhill. In the mine, dirt falls from the ceiling. Looking up in panic, Dobbs backs against the wall as a support beam cracks and the ceiling collapses. Falling debris knocks him to the ground. Outside, Curtin stops shoveling rock into a sluice trough and looks curiously over his shoulder toward the mine. He steps slowly toward the dark entrance, then breaks into a run as a cloud of dust billows out.
Dobbs!
At the entrance, he stares nervously into a haze of dust shrouding the dark tunnel. His gaze hardens. Taking slow, even breaths, Curtin walks away from the mine. Then stops. He turns and dashes into the mine.
Dobbs!
Ducking fallen beams, he hurries deeper into the tunnel and eyes Dobbs lying unconscious on a pile of rubble. Sweat glistens on Curtin's strained, dirt-smeared face as he tosses debris out of the way. He grabs Dobbs underneath the arms and drags his limp body towards the sunlit entrance. Outside, Howard hikes down the mountain.
Howard! Howard! Howard!
The old man runs toward the mine.
Howard, come quick!
Outside the entrance, Curtin carries Dobbs away from the mine and lays him on the ground. Howard kneels next to Dobbs, who starts to come to.
He's coming around. Now lay still a minute to get your senses back.
Now what happened?
Part of the mine caved in on you.
Dobbs stiffly leans on his elbow, takes his hat off, and softly rubs his head.
Got a knock on the head.
No bones broken?
No, I don't think so. Who pulled me out?
Curtin did.
I owe my life to you, partner.
Forget it.
Nighttime. Sitting by a campfire, Howard weighs the gold. Curtin lies next to him, tying a string around a filled sack. Dobbs glances at the two men, then leaves with his sack of gold.
What are you going to do with your hard-earned money, old-timer, when we get back and cash in?
I'm getting along in years. Oh, I can still hold up my own end when it comes to a hard day's work. But I'm not the man I was once. Next year, next month, next week, by thunder, I wouldn't be the man I am today. Oh, I reckon I'll settle down to some quiet place, get me a little business, hardware, grocery store. Spend the better part of my time reading comic strips and adventure stories. One thing's for sure, I'm not going to go prospecting again. Waste my time and money trying to find another gold mine. How about yourself? What plans have you, if any?
Oh, I figure on buying some land and growing fruit. Peaches, maybe.
How'd you come settle on peaches?
One summer when I was a kid, I worked as a picker in a peach harvest in the San Joaquin Valley. Boy, it sure was something. Hundreds of people, old and young, whole families working together. At night after a day's work, we used to build big bonfires and sit around and sing the guitar music. Till morning sometimes. You'd go to sleep and wake up and sing, go to sleep again. Everybody had a wonderful time. Ever since then, I've had a hankering to be a fruit grower. It must be grand watching your own trees put on leaves, come into blossom and bear. Watching the fruit get big and ripe on the boughs, ready for picking.
Dobbs returns.
What's all that about?
We're telling each other what we aim to do when we get back.
Oh, now me, I got it all figured out what I'm going to do.
Tell us about it, Dobbsy.
Well, first off, I'm going to a Turkish bath. I'm going to sweat and soak till I get all the grime and dirt out of my system. Then I'm going to a haberdasher. I'm going to get myself a brand new set of duds. Dozen of everything. Then I'm going to a swell cafe. And order everything on the bill of fare. And if it ain't just right, or maybe even if it is, I'm going to ball the waiter out and make him take the whole thing back.
What's next on the program?
What would be?
Curtin fixes a distant gaze on the night sky. With a thoughtful smile, Dobbs stares into the fire. Sighing, Howard presses his lips together.
You boys, I wouldn't talk or even think about women. It ain't good for your health.
Yeah, maybe you're right, seeing as how the prospects are far off.
You know what? We ought to put some kind of a limit on our take. Agree between ourselves, and when we get so much, we'll just pull up stakes and beat it.
What do you think the limit ought to be?
Oh, say $25,000 worth of peas.
$25,000, small potatoes.
How much do you say?
Oh, $50,000 anyway. $75,000 would be more like it.
That'd take a year at least if the vein held out, which wouldn't be likely.
So what's a year more or less when that kind of money's to be had?
Oh, $25,000's plenty as far as I'm concerned. Enough to last me out the rest of my lifetime.
Well, sure, you're old. I'm young. I need dough and plenty of it.
$25,000 in one piece is more than I ever expected to get my hands on.
Small potatoes.
Well, there's no use making hogs of ourselves.
Dobbs eyes Curtin sharply.
Hog, am I? Maybe you don't know it, but I'd be within my rights if I demanded half again as much as you get.
How come?
Well, there's no denying I put up the lion's share of the cash, is there?
So you did, Dobbsy. And I always meant to pay you back.
Yeah, in any civilized place, the biggest investor gets the biggest return, don't he?
That's one thing in favor of the wilds.
Oh, not that I intend to demand it, but I'd be within my rights if I did. Next time you go call me a hog, just remember what I could have done if I'd wanted to.
I think it'd be wise not to put things strictly on a money basis.
Here you are, Dubs. What I owe you? With interest.
Curtin holds out a scale tray full of gold. Dobbs looks from the tray to Curtin, then tosses the gold into the fire.
Just don't like being called a hog, that's all.
Later, Dobbs sleeps. He wakes up, glances outside the tent, and rolls over. A thick beard frames his hard-featured face, which glows in the pale moonlight. He notices Howard's empty bedroll and sits up swiftly. At his feet, Curtin sleeps soundly with the cover pulled up to his bearded chin. Dobbs, wearing an undershirt and work pants, kicks off his blanket and puts on his boots without tying them. He picks up his pistol, creeps out of the tent, and heads into the woods. As he walks down a path, he meets Howard. Startled, Howard points his gun at Dobbs.
You better not go jumping out on me like that. I might let you have it.
You out for a midnight stroll?
Oh, tiger around. I want to see if the burrows are all right.
So?
What's the matter, Dobbsy?
I think I'll see if the burrows are all right.
Go ahead, help yourself.
Dobbs strides toward the resting burrows that are tied to a nearby tree. Back at the tent, Howard, wearing a union suit, slips off his boots and gets under the covers of his bedroll. Curtin wakes up.
What's up?
Nothing's up.
Where's Dobbs?
Poking around the dark out there.
On a rocky slope, Dobbs takes his sacks of gold out from under a rock, back at the tent.
It's sure taking a long time out there. I think I'll go have a look-see.
Curtin slips on his boots, grabs his pistol, and strides into the woods. In his bedroll, Howard glances after him, then closes his eyes. Moonlight beams through the trees overhead, casting lacy shadows of branches on the tent. He looks up as Dobbs returns, then shuts his eyes again. Dobbs starts to take off his boots, then notices Curtin's empty bedroll and looks firmly at Howard.
Where's Curtin?
He's out there somewhere. Said he was going to have a look-see.
Closing his eyes, Howard lays his head back down. Dobbs shifts his wary gaze. In the woods, Curtin stuffs his sacks of gold into the hollow trunk of a fallen tree. In the tent, Dobbs fixes a flinty gaze on the woods, grabs his pistol, and starts to get up. He kneels back down as he sees Curtin approaching. Curtin briefly meets Dobbs' icy stare, then climbs back into his bedroll. Annoyed, Howard eyes the two men.
Come around to me again, but I won't take my turn if you guys will stop worrying about your goods and go to bed. We got work to do tomorrow.
Howard slumps onto his pillow and closes his eyes. Dobbs and Curtin exchange a frigid look as they lie down. Morning. Kneeling, Dobbs adjusts the burro's harness and talks to himself.
Can't catch me sleeping. Don't you ever believe that. I'm not that dumb. The day you try to put anything over on me, it'll be a costly one for both of you.
As Curtin passes, Dobbs watches him out of the corners of his narrowed eyes. With a guarded stare, Dobbs continues his conversation with himself.
Any more lip out of you, I'll fall off and let you have it. If you know what's good for you, you won't monkey around with Fred C. Dobbs.
At the water barrel, Curtin joins Howard.
Gotta get a load of Dobbs. He's down there talking to himself a mile a minute.
Yeah, something eating him, all right. I don't know what. He just spoiled him for trouble.
Curtin takes a water container off his burrow and pours it into the water tank. Downhill, Howard sneaks up on Dobbs.
They're running short of provisions, Dobbsy. How about you going to the village? What does Howard think he is ordering me around?
What's that, Dobbs?
Nothing.
Better look out. It's a bad sign when a guy starts talking to himself.
Yeah, well, who else am I going to talk to? Certainly not you or Curtin. Fine partners you two are.
Got something up your nose? Blow it out. It'll do you good.
Don't get the idea you two are putting anything over on me.
Take it easy, Dobbs.
I know what your game is.
Well, you know more than I do.
Why am I elected to go to the village? Why me instead of you and Curtin? Oh, don't think I don't see through that. You two thrown together against me. The 2 days I'd be gone would give you plenty of time to discover where my goods are, wouldn't it?
Got any fear along those lines? Why don't you take your goods along with you?
And run the risk of having them taken from me by bandits?
If you was to run into bandits, you'd be out of luck anyway. They'd kill you for the shoes on your feet.
Oh, so that's it. Everything's clear now. You're hoping bandits will get me. That would save you a lot of trouble, wouldn't it? And your consciences wouldn't bother you none, neither.
All right, Dobbs. Forget about it.
Clenching his teeth, Dobbs fiercely eyes Howard, then stalks past him. On a rocky, scrub-covered slope, Curtin, wearing a holster on his belt, leads his burrow downhill. His eye catches a squirrel-sized spotted lizard crawling across the dry grass. He quickly ties his burrow to a bush and picks up a stone as the plump lizard slinks under a rock. He drops the stone, then picks up a long branch and sticks it underneath the lizard's rock. Dobbs stands nearby with his gun aimed at Curtin.
Just like I thought.
It's the idea.
Put your hands up.
As he does, Dobbs takes Curtin's gun.
Mind to haul off and pump you up chest and belly alike.
Go ahead, but would you mind telling me what this is all about?
Don't get you anywhere playing dumb.
Well, I'll be. So that's where your goods are hidden, eh, Dobbsy?
Uh-huh. And what's the trouble here?
It seems like I accidentally stumbled on Dobbsy's treasure.
Accidentally? Why were you trying to pry up that rock? Tell me that.
Because I saw a Gila monster crawl under it.
Brother, I gotta hand it to you. You can certainly think up a good story when you need one.
Okay, I'm a liar. There isn't a Gila monster under there. See you stick your hand in and get your goods out. Go ahead.
Sure I will. Don't you try any bad moves.
Don't worry, I'll stay right where I am. I want to see this. Reach in and get your goods. If you don't, we'll think you're yellow, won't we, Howard?
Dobbs inches toward the hole.
They never let go, do they, Howard, once they grab onto you?
Dobbs hesitates with his hand near the rock.
Cut them in two, and the head will still hang on till sundown, I hear. By that time, the victim doesn't usually care because he's dead anyway. Isn't that right, Howard?
I reckon.
What's the matter, Dobbsy? Why don't you stick your hand right in and get your treasure?
Couldn't be because you're scared to, could it, after the way you've been shooting your mouth off? Show us you ain't yellow, Dobbsy. I'd hate to think that my partner had a yellow streak up his back.
I'll kill you, you dirty thieving.
Dobbs lunges, and Curtin grabs his gun.
Okay, Howard, I got him covered. Dobbs, another bad move out of you, and I'll blow you to kingdom come. Howard, turn that rock over, will you?
Using the branch as a lever, Howard sticks it under the rock and pushes down. He pries off the rock, exposing the spotted Gila monster on top of Dobbs's gold. Curtin meets Dobbs' stupefied gaze with a cold, hard stare, then carefully aims his gun at the lizard. Dobbs flinches. The Gila monster's tail twitches, then stills. Head bowed, Dobbs steps weightily to a nearby rock and sits staring down at the parched earth. Later, Curtin leads three burros into town. He glances down the end of the street where a crowd is gathered.
Son forasteros, ¿verdad?
He ties the burros to a porch.
¿De qué parte son? ¡Contesten!
Joining the crowd, he watches a Mexican soldier interrogate two bandits.
¿De qué parte son? ¿Qué más pruebas? La cartera con el boleto.
No cabe duda.
Ustedes son los bandidos.
An American eyes Curtin.
Después del asalto al tren, le seguimos la pista. La misma fecha. Van a ver lo que les va a pasar por bandoleros.
Looking at a wallet, the soldier slaps a bandit.
¡Levántalo!
As the other bandit reaches for a bottle, he's shoved. The soldier addresses the crowd.
¿En dónde está el cementerio del pueblo?
The bystanders raise their hands.
¡Condúzcalos usted!
¡De frente! ¡Arche!
Flanking the two bandits, 12 soldiers armed with rifles march down the wide street, past windowless adobe buildings. The crowd follows. Wearing white shirts and sombreros, the men walk on the right, the dark-haired women on the left. The tall, lean American from the crowd follows Curtin to his burrows.
Federales are very efficient.
Startled, Curtin whips around.
Yeah. Banditos, eh?
Yeah, it seems between them they had a diamond ring, pearl earrings, quite a lot of money, and a railway ticket with the date of the Aguascaliente train robbery on it. They've been here several days, drinking and shooting off their cannons. The villagers are afraid to stick their noses out of their huts.
Where are they taking them now?
The cemetery.
Oh.
Curtin enters a store and reads a list to the merchant.
Un costal de maíz.
The American follows.
Harina 12 kilos, azúcar 12 kilos.
You know, the federales don't operate in our American way. They aren't fingerprint experts, that is. They can follow any trail. Against them, no hideouts, any use. They know all the tricks of the bandits. Yeah, you can bet your sweet soul they'll trace down every last one of that group that attacked the train. It'll take time, months maybe, but they'll do it.
Frijoles, 10 kilos. Petróleo, 18 litros.
18 litros.
Not many Americans get around this way. You're the first one I've bumped into for a long time.
That's so?
Mighty rugged country hereabouts.
Yeah.
My name's Cody.
They shake hands.
I'm from Texas. Curtin. What's your game?
I'm a hunter.
Professional?
Yeah.
Well, what all do you hunt?
Oh, tiger cats. Anything of commercial value.
How long did you say you'd been in these mountains?
Oh, a few months.
Ever seen anything that looked like pay dirt?
Curtin hesitates.
No.
I've a hunch there's loads of the real goods up in those mountains.
No, I know the whole landscape around here. If there'd been a single grain of gold, you can bet I'd have sure seen it.
Ah, oh, there's nothing doing here for gold. Listen, brother, I can look at a hill 5 miles away and tell you whether it carries an ounce or a shipload.
Cuantos?
22 pesos.
If you haven't found anything up there yet, I'll come along with you and put your nose in it. But there's indications in this valley, lots of indications. By tracing the rocks, I find they come from that ridge up there, washed down by the tropical rain.
You don't say so?
Yes, I say so.
They glance outside.
So much for those bandits. You know, you gotta hand it to the Mexicans when it comes to swift justice. Once the federales get their mitts on a criminal, they know just what to do with him. They hand him a shovel, tell him where to dig. When he's dug deep enough, they tell him to put the shovel down, smoke a cigarette, and say his prayers. In another 5 minutes, he's being covered over with the earth he dug out.
Yeah, you gotta hand it to him, all right.
Curtin and the merchant grab the two heavy supply sacks and head outside. With an eager gaze, Cody takes the last one. They hang the supplies from wooden saddles on the burro's backs.
I meant what I said about going along with you. Those are my two burros. I'm all packed up and ready to start. If you let me go with you, back to your camp.
Oh, thanks anyway, but I prefer going up by myself.
Good luck.
Burros.
Curtin tugs the rope of the lead burro and leaves. Squinting into the sun, Cody watches Curtin and strokes his scruffy chin in thought. Nighttime at camp.
I want to weigh her arm and stayed on hard ground, which wouldn't show the tracks. Every time I hit a high point and looked back, I could see he was still coming right along. I guess it's only a matter of time until he shows up here.
I move we tell him straight off to beat it.
Nah, no, that'd be foolish. He'd sit around for an hour or so playing the innocent and then go and report us to the officials. Once they were here, we couldn't stay any long, and we couldn't take our goods with us when we left.
All right, then there's nothing else to do but pull the trigger the minute he appears.
No crime to visit these mountains. He might be a guy that just liked to wander around. Can't shoot him for that. And besides, if you were to shoot him, it might come out.
We don't have to shoot him necessarily. We'd push him off one of them rocks and claim it as an accident.
Just who's going to do the pushing? You, Dodsey?
Yeah, we've talked for it. You sure he was trailing you, are you?
Absolutely.
How come?
Because there he is.
Howard and Dobbs shoot a surprised look at Cody, who stands in the dark at the edge of camp. As he steps into the flickering light of the campfire and ties his two burros to a tree, Dobbs approaches. With firelight glowing on his weathered skin, he aims a steely stare at Cody.
Come over by the fire.
Cody saunters to the edge of the campfire, crouches, and holds his hands over the flames to warm them. Wearing a faint smile, he glances at Howard and Curtin.
I know quite well, you fellas, I'm not wanted here. But even after what you told me, I simply couldn't resist the desire to sit around and jaw with an American.
Well, why don't you go where those Americans might want to talk to you? Durango isn't too far off. They got one of them American clubs there.
I'm not after that. I've got other things on my mind more important.
So we. Don't you make any mistakes. Our biggest worry right now is your presence here. We got no use for you. We don't even want you for a cook or a dishwasher. We're full up. No vacancies, understand? And in case I don't make myself clear, I think you'll be doing yourself a favor by packing up and getting out of here tomorrow morning. Go back where you came from. Take our blessings with you.
Howard passes Cody a plate.
Thanks.
Yeah. Go ahead. Help yourself. We're no misers. We don't let guys starve to death. Tonight, you're our guest. But tomorrow morning, look out. No trespassing around here. You know, beware the dogs. Get it?
Glancing soberly at the men, Cody eats his food. Dobbs winks at Curtin.
Got myself five foxes and a lion while you were away at the village.
How are the hides?
Pretty good.
Where'd you hit them?
Right through their eyes.
Excuse me for butting in, but there's no game around here worth going after. It wouldn't take 1 week for a real hunter to clean up all around for 5 miles in each direction.
Howard chuckles.
Yeah, you're right. There's no good hunting here. That's why I've made up my mind to quit this ground inside a week and look for something better. Yeah, stranger, you're dead right. It's awful poor ground. Took us some time to find it out.
Poor ground, you say? Depends on what you're looking for. For game, yes. It's mighty good ground for something else.
Yeah? What might that be?
Gold.
Dobbs and Curtin share a nervous look.
Gold? That's a good one.
I told you in the village, mister, there's no gold around here.
A boy, if there'd been one single ounce of it, I'd have seen it. Believe me, I would.
If you haven't found any gold here, then you're not as smart as you appear to be.
Well, maybe. Maybe you're right. Who knows? Yeah? We never thought about gold. Gives me an idea. Guess I'll sleep on it. Well, I'll hit the hay.
Yeah, me too. Till in the morning, mister.
Motionless, Dobbs stands behind Cody, watching him eat. Over his shoulder, Cody glances at Dobbs's grim face, sets his plate down, and stands up. Undaunted, he firmly meets Dobbs's hawkish gaze, then turns and walks to his burrows. In the tent, Curtin and Howard get ready for bed.
I can't figure this bird out. Is he wise to us, or isn't he?
Well, whether he is or not, he looks fairly harmless to me.
Yeah, it looks can be mighty deceiving.
Yeah, there's no denying that.
Dobbs joins them.
I'm keeping my boots on this night. I'm taking his head to murder us all in our sleep.
Yeah, anything can happen.
Well, then.
All right, tell you what. You two guys go to sleep and I'll be watchdog for a couple of hours. Then you and Curtin can take your turns.
Okay, you got your gun handy?
Yeah, right here.
Holding his gun in one hand, Howard kneels and dims the flame of a glass lantern that hangs from the ceiling. By the campfire, Cody lays out his bedroll. In the dark tent, Dobbs pulls his blanket over his chest and lies down. Howard looks at Dobbs and Curtin, then sets his gun aside and curls up on his side. Morning. Cody crouches by the fire and pours himself a cup of coffee from a tin kettle. Dobbs crawls out of his tent, looking sternly at him.
Good morning, friend.
Dobbs faces him squarely.
Where'd you get the water to make coffee?
I just took it out of the oil.
Oh, you did you? Well, we didn't carry that water up here for you to make coffee, see?
I'm sorry, I didn't know water was so hard to get.
Hey, well, you know what now?
I'll talk about that for you.
What's up?
Well, I caught this guy stealing our water. Next time you try that, I'll let it out of you through little round holes.
I thought perhaps I was among civilized men who wouldn't begrudge me a little fresh water.
Who's not civilized?
Dobbs slugs Cody. On the ground, Cody fixes a cold stare at Dobbs and gets to his feet.
I could easily do the same for you. It's not settled yet who'd come out on top.
This time I took it. Thanks for your kind attention.
Well, you stranger, I'd pack up and go while the going's good.
I mean to stay right here. Brush and the mountains are free, aren't they?
Sure. That's right, to whoever's first on the spot.
That holds for hunters, but not for gold miners. Unless, of course, they happen to have registered their claim. Who says we have a claim to register? Whatever you say or don't say, tomorrow I start to dig for gold here.
Cody glances steadily at the prospector's hardened stares. He squats down.
Well, I know very well you guys could bump me off any minute you wish, but that's a risk worth running, considering the stakes. Let's lay all our cards on the table. As I see it, you guys have got to do one of three things. Kill me, run me off, or take me in with you as a partner. Let's consider the first. Another guy may come along tomorrow, or maybe a dozen other guys. If you start bumping people off, just how far are you prepared to go with it? Ask yourselves that. Also, don't forget, the one actually to do the bumping off would forever be in the power of the other two. The only safe way would be for all three of you to drag out your cannons and bang away at the same instant like a firing squad.
We wouldn't stop at anything to protect our interests.
I claim killing me, isn't it? But of course, that's for you to decide. As for choice number two, if you run me off, I might very well inform on you.
We'd get you if you did that. We'd get you if you had to go all the way to China.
25% of the value of your find is the reward I'd get paid, and that'd be mighty tempting. Mighty tempting.
It's a pretty strong argument in favor of our doing number one, mister.
I don't deny it. But let's see what number three has to offer. If you take me in with you as a partner, you don't stand to lose anything. I'll not ask to share in what you've made so far, only in the profits to come. Well, what do you say?
Dobbs gives Howard an uncertain look.
Is my stranger letting us talk this over alone among ourselves?
Not at all. Go ahead. I have to look after my burros anyway.
He stands. Picking up his hat, Cody heads further up the path along the ridge, where stunted, wind-bent trees rise from rocky ground. Dobbs grimly faces Howard.
What do you think?
Send him away is out of the question. Either we bump him off or make him a partner.
Fred C. Dobbs ain't a guy likes being taken advantage of. Do the mug in, I say. He told us how, didn't he? All three of us hold out our cannons and let him have it.
What do we gain by bumping him off? He was asking to share in what we made, it'd be different. I don't mind being taken some advantage of so long as it isn't money out of my pocket.
And whoever else happens along, they'll be invited in too. Come one, come all, eh?
Yeah, you got a point there, Dobbs. No question about that. But, kill him.
What's the matter? Ain't you up to it?
Sure, I'm up to it. Let the majority decide.
They look at Curtin.
What's your vote, partner?
For or against?
Curtin looks pensively away from them, then glances back.
For.
Okay. Let's make it short and sweet for him.
Dobbs and Curtin check their revolver cylinders for bullets. Howard goes to the tent to fetch his gun. He hesitates, then joins his partners as they walk up the ridge. Dobbs leads the way up the rocks. The men reach Cody. He stares at them with wide, defiant eyes and clenched fists. They stand facing him. Dobbs and Howard cock their guns.
So it's number one, is it? Better take a look down that hill first.
Frowning, Dobbs and the others gaze down the steep ridge slope. Far below, about a dozen people on horseback move in single file up the hill like a column of ants.
Can't make out what they are. They must be soldiers.
So that's your stinking game, is it? Informing. I knew you was an informer. I knew it all the time.
You're wrong, brother. This means all our funerals.
What's that?
It's what I think it is. May the Lord be with us. They're not soldiers, they're bandits. And they're not after gold, but after guns and ammunition. Someone at the village must have told them about the American hunter up here.
They don't look like soldiers to me, either.
they are, all right. Bandits.
We better start thinking of a way to defend ourselves. Might try hiding the rocks, but then we lose the birds and the whole outfit. No, the best thing is to make a fight of it. You seem to have good eyes. You stay up here in this lookout for the time being and watch their movements. Curtin, you round up all the birds and herd them in that thicket over there. Dobbs, let you and me wrap up all our belongings and dump them in the trench.
With a worried glance at Cody, Dobbs turns and walks with the others back down to camp. Far down on the scrubby, sun-swept ridge, the single-file group of bandits advances steadily. Back at camp, Dobbs and Howard hurry over to their tent and dismantle it, pulling the stakes out of the ground. Curtin herds away the burros. Later, Dobbs shovels dirt over the fire pit. Cody nervously keeps watch on the approaching bandits, now much closer.
They're turning on the trail.
How many of them are there?
About a dozen.
It'd be the best part of an hour getting here, so we better have something to eat. Come on down, friend.
Later, the four men lie spread out among the rocks above the campsite. Cody glances back and waves a signal to Curtin, who waves in return. Farther back, Dobbs notices and puts down his half-eaten plate of beans. Howard puts down his beans and lies flat on the ground behind a rock. They wait. Cody and Dobbs with rifles, Curtin and Howard with six-shooters. The bandits appear on the trail. Winding slowly along the rocky path, some ride their horses, others walk them. They wear wide-brimmed hats. Ammunition belts cross their chests like the letter X. Howard squints warily from his vantage point as the bandits reach the clearing of the quickly deserted campsite. Dobbs is closest to them. He hunches down behind a rock ledge and grips his rifle. Curtin slides over to Howard.
Howard, look, Howard. The one in the gold hat, remember?
Yeah, the band in the train robbery. I think whoever is here is gone. Some want to go back on down the mountains, another want to stay up here and use this site as a headquarters to raid the villages in the valley.
How about pulling it into them, bumping off as many as we can real fast?
No, let's hold our horses.
One of the bandits wanders toward Dobbs' hiding place. Dobbs peeks out and shows his rifle.
Alto! Parele, parele!
The bandit turns to his leader, a man in the gold hat.
Está echadita.
Oiga, señor. We are federales. You know, the mountain police.
If you're the police, where are your badges?
Badges? We ain't got no badges. We don't need no badges. I don't have to show you any stinking badges.
Better not come any closer.
No sea tonto, hombre. We didn't try to do you any harm. Why don't you try to be a little more polite? Give us your gun, and we leave you in peace.
I need my gun myself.
Throw that old iron over here. We'll pick it up and go on our way.
You go anyway without my gun and go quick.
He shoots a hole in the bandit's hat.
All right. All right. Vámonos, Patras.
The leader walks away. Patras follows, looking fearfully over his shoulder. Dobbs watches them, only the upper part of his sweaty, sun-creased face showing above the ledge. The bandits confer. The prospectors eye them suspiciously. Now Gold Hat and Patras approach Dobbs.
Look here, amigo. You got the wrong idea. We don't want to get your gun for nothing. We want to buy it. Look, I have a gold watch with a gold chain made in your own country. The watch and the chain, they're worth at least 200 pesos. I'll change it for your gun. You better take it. That's a good business for you.
You keep your watch, I'll keep my gun.
Oh, you keep it. You will keep it. We won't get it. I'll show you.
Me lleva la...
Howard shoots the watch. Patras stares at it, bewildered. Howard glances at Curtin, yes, who winks. Gold Hat goes back to his men.
Bueno, muchachos. Vamos. Agarren la caballada y escóndala allá atrás.
Dobbs smiles as the bandits leave the clearing with their horses. The bandits open fire at the prospectors, who shoot back. Dobbs carefully aims his rifle, fires, and cocks it again. Howard cranks off a couple of rounds, then ducks down. A bullet kicks up a puff of dirt near Dobbs. The bandits retreat into the bushes on the other side of the clearing. Curtin pulls his trigger, but he's out of bullets. He ducks down to reload. Bandits scurry left and right across the clearing. One makes it safely and dives behind a rock. Howard carefully aims his revolver, squinting down the barrel, and fires. The bandit slumps over dead. Curtin, Dobbs, and Howard wait, their guns poised. Nothing moves on the dust-clouded clearing. Dobbs belly crawls over to Howard and Curtin.
Anybody get hurt? Looks like we won that round.
That guy with the gold hat, ain't he?
Yeah, we spotted him too. A train robber.
Maybe they got enough, huh?
No, I doubt it. Not to know this anyway, four guns will be more determined than ever.
What do you suppose they'll pull next?
No, tell them. All we can do is sit tight. Oh, Cody. You all right?
Howard frowns at the others. The burly Curtin takes his gun and starts to crawl across the uneven, rocky ground toward Cody's position. Bullets from the bandits pelt the dirt all around him. He covers his head. As his partners fire back at the unseen bandits in the bushes, Curtin reaches Cody. He rolls the motionless body over and gazes at it. Curtin stuffs Cody's bullets in his shirt pocket, picks up Cody's rifle, and heads back toward his partners, who continue to fire at the bandits. Curtin ducks and scrambles his way over the rocks till he reaches Howard and Dobbs.
He's dead. Got it right through the neck.
One less gun.
They listen.
Chopping. Wood for camp, that's funny.
Yeah. Look to what I think they are, it ain't funny at all.
What's that?
The building barricades that move. It's an old Indian trick. Crawl along and push the barricades before them and you can't see where to shoot. Brother, I'd be willing to trade my share of this gold mine right now for three or four hand grenades. You better get to your posts.
Dobbs and Curtin exchange a tense look and crawl back to their old positions. Holding their guns at the ready, the three men nervously eye the far bushes. Nothing moves.
Vamos, muchachos! Vamos!
Dobbs frowns, watching and listening.
Hey, they're beating us!
Curtin and Dobbs warily move back to Howard's post.
What do you make of that?
Your guess is as good as mine.
Wait a minute, Dobbs. This may be just a trick to lure us out.
I don't think so. They ain't good enough actors for this kind of a trick.
As Dobbs moves off to climb higher on the ridge, the grizzled, sweaty Howard squints across the clearing. Meanwhile, Dobbs clambers up the rocks among short, weathered pine trees. He reaches a high plateau and gazes out.
Hey, partner! Up here! Here's a sight if there ever was one!
They hurry up to join him. Far down the hill, the mounted bandits flee from an oncoming troop of Federales.
Federales, look at them. I could kiss every one of them.
They must have gotten it from the villages. There were bandits headed up this way.
Why not the bandits wait up here and make a fight of it?
Because they know all the tricks, that's why. With us at their backs and the Federales facing them, they wouldn't have a chance.
Oh, go get them. Sick them tight. Chew them up and don't spit them out. Swallow them. Oh, am I happy? Tell you the truth, I was already eating dirt.
Howard looks over at Cody's body.
Wonder who he is.
Dobbs's smile fades.
Oh.
He's got any folks?
I suppose he has.
Let's take a look at his belongings.
The three men come down from the ridge. They stand looking at Cody, who lies sprawled against a rock. Howard leans down and searches Cody's pockets. He pulls out a wallet and looks inside.
A few hundred pesos. Name is James Cody, Dallas, Texas. There's a letter from Dallas, too. Must be his home. Reckon she's his girl.
Not bad.
Dear Jim, your letter just arrived. It was such a relief to get word after so many months of...
Silence.
Silence. I realize, of course, that
there aren't any mailboxes
that you can drop a letter in
out there in the wild.
Cuba.
But that doesn't keep me from worrying about you. Little Jimmy is fine, but he misses his daddy almost as much as I do. He keeps asking, when's daddy coming home? You say if you do not make a real find this time, you'll never go again. I cannot begin to tell you how my heart rejoices at those words, if you really mean them. Now I feel free to tell you I've never thought any material treasure, no matter how great, is worth the pain of these long separations. The country is especially lovely this year. It's been a perfect spring, warm rains and hardly any frost. The fruit trees are all in bloom. The upper orchard looks aflame, and the lower like after a snowstorm. Everybody looks forward to big crops. I do hope you are back for the harvest.
Curtin turns the page over.
Of course, I'm hoping that you will at last strike it rich. It is high time for luck to start smiling upon you. But just in case she doesn't, remember, we've already found life's real treasure. Forever yours, Helen.
Howard puts the letter back.
Well, I guess we better dig a hole for him.
Pocketing the wallet, Howard reaches down and gently closes Cody's eyes. Later, the prospectors sift more gold. Dobbs peers inside a can.
Yeah, not so good. Not so good as yesterday.
You want my opinion? It's going to be a whole lot less from now on. We're taking about all the gold this mountain has.
How much do you figure we got to date?
Not as much as we was aiming to collect. Not 40,000, not that much.
I'm willing to lower my hindsight.
Oh, we got upwards of 35,000 apiece, and I tell you, we ought to be plenty thankful.
Let's call it quits and pack up and leave. And the sooner the better, as far as I'm concerned. I don't want to keep that dame waiting, whoever she is.
Take another week to break down the mine and put the mountain back in shape.
Do what to the mountain?
Make her appear like she was before we came.
I don't get it.
We wounded this mountain. It's our duty to close her wounds. It's the least we can do to show our gratitude for all the wealth she's given us. If you guys don't want to help me, I'll do it alone.
You talk about that mountain like it was a real woman.
She's been a lot better to me than any woman I ever knew. Keep a shirt on, old-timer. Sure, I'll help you.
Later, the three weary prospectors each gather their sacks of gold powder. Laying the small, bulging sacks in folds of thick cloth, they pack furry animal hides around them for disguise. Curtin ties one of his cloth packages with rope and lugs it over to a patiently waiting burrow. Howard does the same, hooking the package rope around the posts of a small wooden mount on his burrow's back. Curtin drapes a spotted animal hide over the packs on his burrow. Now Howard takes up his burrow's lead ropes.
Well, I reckon that's about everything. Each man's burrows with his goods better be his own responsibility. Bye, Martin, and thanks.
He leads his burrows away.
Yeah. Thanks, Martin.
Dobbs salutes the summit.
Thanks.
Curtin waves too and follows the others with his burrows in tow. Nighttime. At a cramped campsite in the woods, Howard lies on his back and plays his harmonica. Dobbs rolls and lights a cigarette. Curtin stares pensively into the fire.
I've been thinking about her. Cody's widow, I mean, and the kid. You know what? We ought to give him a fourth, just as if he'd been our partner from the start.
What, a fourth of all our goods?
That's right.
Are you crazy?
Hadn't it been for Cody, we wouldn't have walked away from that mountain. Ask Howard.
Yeah, the buzzard would have got fat on us, all right.
Yeah, it might just as well have been one of us. But it wasn't as our good luck and his bad.
Whatever you guys do, I'm going to give a fourth.
Well, I got more than I need anyhow. Half what I got's enough to last me out. Fourth? Sure.
You two guys must have been born in a revival meeting.
A figure appears at the edge of the campsite. We see only a hand holding a curved sickle.
We got company.
A grim-faced Mexican watches them. Dobbs starts to jump up.
Steady, boys.
Lamplight shadows of leaves rustle on the man's pallid, mustached face. Three companions step up beside him. They solemnly remove their hats.
Buenas noches. Señores, podemos sentarnos a descansar un poquito. Por favor.
Con mucho gusto. ¿Cómo no, amigos? ¿Quieren tomar café con nosotros?
Sí. Gracias, señores.
The four Mexicans sit.
Curtain. Coffee.
Two of the Mexicans glance at each other as Curtin pours a cup of coffee.
Give him some tobacco.
Dobbs picks up a pack.
Hey.
He tosses it to the man on the end. Another Mexican leans over the fire and hands Howard a sack of his tobacco.
Gracias.
Howard takes some and hands the sack to Dobbs.
We give them our tobacco, they give us theirs. I don't get it. Why not everybody smoke his own?
Take some and thank him.
Dobbs takes a pinch and passes the sack to Curtin as Howard rolls a cigarette.
They're after something. Take them a while to come to point. Say what you want right off the bat, and consider polite among Indians.
One man with matted hair and dark, almondine eyes lights his cigarette with the glowing end of a stick from the fire. He hands the stick to his companion, who blows on it to make it glow, then lights his own cigarette. He passes it to the younger man next to him. Lighting his cigarette, he nods to the fourth man and exchanges the stick for a cup of coffee. The gaunt, sharp-nosed fourth man calmly lights his cigarette.
They got nothing but time, huh?
The leader stands and holds his wide-brimmed hat to his chest.
Pues verá usted, señor. Mijito, se cayó al agua. Lo sacamos tan pronto como pudimos. No se mueve ni nada. Y no quiere revivir. Pero yo creo que no está muerto. Necesitamos ayuda. Por favor.
¿Cuándo sucedió esto a su hijito?
Esta tarde, señor.
Oh. Says little boy fell in the water and they fished him out. He won't come to. He ain't dead, but he just won't come to.
Oh, tough.
I'll go have a look at the boy. I'll be back a little while before morning, probably.
Howard gets up and joins the four men.
Bueno, amigos.
They head off into the night. Howard looks back at his partners.
Look after my goods while I'm gone, huh?
He follows the Mexicans away on the trail. Later, in a village clearing, dozens of Mexican men, women, and children gather around a torch-lit straw bed where Howard attends to a thin, unconscious boy of about 6 years. The father looks on gravely as Howard leans over the young, shirtless boy. Holding the boy's wrists, he lifts his thin arms repeatedly over his head and back down to rest on his stomach. He does it gently, rhythmically. Young and old, the villagers watch him. Howard looks up at the boy's mother and beckons.
Tequila.
She hands him a bottle. He opens it and pours a capful of the liquor into the unconscious boy's mouth. The boy doesn't respond. Howard bends down and puts his ear to the thin, shirtless chest. He takes a cloth, dips it in a bowl of water, and places it on the boy's stomach. The mother looks down expressionless. She gives him a small fragment of a mirror. Howard holds it next to the boy's mouth and nose, looking for signs of breathing. Howard studies the young, slack face with a frown. He puts down the mirror, takes the boy's wrists, and begins the artificial respiration again, pumping his arms up and back. He stares hard and grasps the boy's tiny right hand in his own burly one. He slaps it. He takes his delicate left hand and rubs it vigorously. Placing the boy's hands back on the bed, Howard listens again at his chest. A smile spreads across Howard's whiskered face. He slides his hands under the boy's back and lifts him gently upright. The boy grimaces miserably, his eyes still shut. Howard braces the reviving boy's head. He pushes the dark hair from his forehead and gently pats the boy's cheek. Slowly, the boy opens his eyes. His father gazes at him.
Milagro. Bendito sea Dios.
The mother smiles and embraces her son. Villagers cross themselves in solemn thanks. Men respectfully remove their hats. Howard puts his on, slings his blanket over his shoulder, and makes his way through the crowd. Some villagers hold lit candles as they step back to let Howard pass. The next day, the three prospectors herd their burros along a trail past bush and cactus.
Artificial respiration did it in a few Boy Scout tricks. I think it was more shock than drowning. He hadn't swallowed much water. Maybe he was stunned while diving.
What gets me is how these Indians knew we were in this neck of the woods anyhow.
When you're near their villages, they always know. Don't ask me how, they just know.
They stop and look back. A group of villagers approaches swiftly on horseback. Dobbs draws his gun as they come up. The father of the young boy dismounts and faces Howard, hat in hand.
¿Por qué se van de la comarca?
The mission negotiation is important in Durango.
No se vayan tan pronto. Queremos que estén con nosotros una semana.
Muchas gracias por la invitación. Pero necesitamos estar en Durango en dos semanas.
What's up?
He's insisting we return with him to his village and be his guests.
Oh, tell him to forget it. Tell him he don't owe us a thing.
Mi mayor recompensa fue el gusto que sentí cuando el niño abrió los ojos.
Tengo que pagarle mi deuda. Si no, se enojarían todos los santos del cielo. Deben de venir.
Because if he doesn't pay off his debt, all the saints in heaven will be angry. Now, this is no laughing matter. I'm afraid he's determined to take us with him, even if it means force.
I'll handle this.
Dobbs faces the father.
Sabe, hombre. No put that key down. No, no, savvy?
They raise machetes.
Wait a minute, you guys. You can't fight your way out of this. Put your guns away. Have every Indian on the mountain on our trail. We'll be scouting in half an hour. Under me, amigos.
No hagan nada. El señor y el señor no importa. El doctor sí importa.
Well, what'd he say then?
Said don't make any difference about you guys, but I have to come.
Oh, it's like that, eh? He just wants you.
Yeah, looks like it.
Well, then, why don't you go along with him, stay a few days, and we'll meet you in Durango. We'll wait for you there.
What about my goods?
Why don't you take them with you? Now, if they found out, they might forget he was their honored guest and bump him off.
All right, what'll I do, dump him out here on the ground?
We'll take him with us if you want us to and wait for you in Durango.
Yeah. I reckon that's about the only solution.
Yeah, I'll bet you'll remember this the next time you try to do a good deed.
Maybe after I've stayed with these fellows a little while, they'll give me a horse to ride. In that case, I may be a day or two behind you in Durango.
Oh, that'll be swell. Good luck, Howard.
Yeah. Yeah, all the luck in the world. We'll be lonesome without you. But you know, my Sunday school teacher used to...
A villager glares.
You say you got to learn to swallow disappointments in this sad life.
Hurry up and join us.
Yeah, and look out for those Indian dames. They tell me they're pretty smart. One of them squaws might marry you.
Well, maybe I'll do just that. Pick me out a good-looking squaw and marry her. They're easy to dress and feed and entertain. They don't nag at you either. Well, so long, partners.
See you in Durango.
Howard hops on a horse and rides off with the Indians. Dobbs and Curtin watch them go, waving heartily. Howard throws one last glance over his shoulder, then continues down the trail. Later, Dobbs leads the burros down a rock-strewn path. He clenches a long stick to drive the animals. Curtin brings up the rear. Pausing, Dobbs unstraps a small sack from one of the donkey's saddles and plops onto a rock. He uncorks a water bottle and takes a long guzzle. He spits out a mouthful of water, then wipes his lips. Curtin wearily trudges over and squats across from him.
Hey.
Dobbs tosses him the water bottle, raises his stick to beat one of the burros, then slaps his thigh in frustration.
Ain't it always his burros that won't march in line? Stray off the trail and smash their packs against the trees and the rocks. I wish they'd stray off far enough to fall down about 2,000 foot of gorge. What was in your head when you offered to carry his goods for him so he couldn't manage by himself? You know what he was doing when he turned him over to us? Mighty cute of him, wasn't it?
I see you surrounding against the old man. Won't do any good. Save your breath for that next piece of trail.
I'm stopping here for the night. If you want to go on, it's okay with me, but take his burros with you. Ain't my responsibility.
It's early yet. We'll make 4 or 5 miles more before dark.
Well, nobody ordered you to stay here. You can go 20 miles more for all I care.
Ordered me? You? Who's ordering who to do anything? You talk like you're a boss of this outfit.
They both stand.
Maybe you are. Let's hear you say it.
All right. You can't go any further.
Who says I can? Don't make me laugh. Well, I can go 4 times as far as a mug like you, but I don't want it. I could if I wanted, but I don't want to see mug.
Curtin glowers, then shifts his gaze.
Oh, what's the use of hollering? We're started on something. We've got to finish it, like it or not. We'll camp here.
Nighttime. As they sit on the ground, Dobbs hugs his knees to his chest and rocks back and forth.
Wonder what the old man's doing now.
Eating a meal of roast turkey and drinking a bottle of tequila, probably.
This is the first day we've had to handle everything without his help. Once we get the hang of it, it'll be a lot easier.
How far away do you suppose the railroad is?
Oh, not so far as the crow flies.
We ain't crows.
I figure we can reach the high pass in 2 days more. After that, it'll be 3 or 4 days to the railroad. That's figuring no hard luck on the trail, of course. What's the joke, Dobbsy? Aren't you going to let me in on it?
In on it? Sure I will. Sure.
Well, go ahead and spill it. What's so funny?
I was just thinking what a bonehead play that old jackass made when he put all his goods in our keeping.
How do you mean?
Figured let us do his sweating for him, did he? We'll show him.
What are you getting at?
Oh, man, can't you see? It's all ours. We don't go back to Durango at all, savvy? Not at all.
I don't follow you, Dobbsy.
Oh, don't be such a sap. Where did you ever grow up? All right, to make it clear to a dumb head like you, we take all his goods and go straight up north and leave the old jackass flat.
You aren't serious, are you? You don't really mean what you're saying.
Fred C. Dobbs don't say nothing he don't mean.
As long as I'm here and can do anything about it, you won't touch a single grain of the old man's goods.
I know exactly what you mean. You want to take it all for yourself and cut me out?
No, Dobbs. I'm on the level with the old man, just as I'd be on the level with you if you weren't here.
Get off your soapbox, will you? You only sound foolish out here in this wilderness. I know you for what you are. For a long time, I've had my suspicions about you. Now I know I've been right.
What suspicions are you talking about?
Oh, you're not putting anything over on me. I see right through you. For a long time, you've had it in your mind to bump me off at the first good opportunity and bury me out here in the bush like a dog, so she can take not only the old man's goods, but mine in the bargain. And when you get to Durango safely, you'll have a big laugh, won't you? Thinking how dumb the old man and I were.
Curtin starts to rise.
If you make another move toward me, and I'll pull the trigger.
Dobbs whips out his gun.
Right, get your hands up. Come on, get him up!
Curtin slowly raises his hands.
Was I right, or was I? You and your Sunday school talk about protecting people's goods. You. Come on, stand up and take it like a man. Come on, get up!
Curtin tackles him and takes out his own gun.
Let go of it.
He takes Dobbs's pistol.
Cards are dealt the other way now, Dobbs.
Yeah.
Now listen to me.
Listen to you.
Look, you're all wrong. Not for a moment did I ever intend to rob you or do you any harm. Just like I said, I'd fight for you and yours just the same as I'd fight for the old man's.
If you really mean that, give me back my gun.
Standing over him with both pistols, Curtin empties out Dobbs's bullets, then gives him the gun.
My pal.
Wouldn't it be better the way things are to separate tomorrow? Or even tonight?
That would suit you fine, wouldn't it?
Why me more than you?
So you could fall on me from behind, sneak up and shoot me in the back.
All right, I'll go first.
And wait for me on the trail, ambush me?
Why wouldn't I do it right here and now if I meant to kill you?
I'll tell you why. Because you're yellow. You haven't got nerve enough to pull the trigger while I'm looking you straight in the eye.
If you you think like that, there's nothing to do but to tie you up every night.
I'll tell you what. I'll make you a little bet. 3 times 35 is 105. I'll bet you $105,000 you go to sleep before I do.
Warily, Curtin takes a seat across from him. Dobbs studies his partner with an evil glint in his eye. Daytime. Dobbs leads the burros down the trail. In the rear, Curtin blinks, struggling to keep his eyes open. His head droops drowsily. Dobbs quickly ducks behind a tree to ambush him. As Curtin staggers toward him, Dobbs holds out the butt of his gun. Stumbling over a rock, Curtin spots Dobbs. He pulls out his gun.
Get up there at the head of the train.
Dobbs reluctantly pockets his gun and heads toward the burrows. Curtin follows. That night, Curtin points his gun at Dobbs, who sits on the other side of the campfire. Hunched forward, Curtin's head lolls and his eyes start to close. His lids flutter as he opens them and stares at Dobbs with a hangdog expression. Dobbs sits up with an alert, watchful gaze. Curtin begins to bow his head, his eyes slowly closing. He valiantly attempts to remain awake, but his head dips as his eyes finally shut. Falling onto his stomach, he lies still on the ground. Dobbs gets to his feet and carefully tiptoes over. He stares down at Curtin for a moment, then bends over, picks up the gun, and kicks Curtin onto his back. He yanks Curtin by his hair.
Cards are dealt the other way now, and for the last time, no more shuffling.
What cards are you talking about?
I'm going to finish this right now. No more taking orders from you like I had to do today, get me?
You mean you're going to murder me?
No, brother, not murder, no. Your mistake. I'm doing this to save my life, that you'd be taken from me the minute I wasn't looking at you.
The old man will catch up with you.
Oh, he will, Willie. Well, I got an answer for that one, too. You know what I'm going to tell him? I'm going to tell him you tied me to a tree and made your getaway, taking all the goods, yours, mine, and his. So they'd be looking for you and not me. Up! Today I had to march to your music, now you'll march to mine.
Where?
To your funeral.
He shoves him forward.
Come on, keep going. Get up. Sleepy, huh? You'll be asleep soon enough, sound asleep.
Brandishing the gun, he pushes Curtin into a wooded area behind a large tree. Both disappear from sight. Dobbs wanders out alone. His arm swings at his side, the gun still in his hand. He pauses reflectively for a moment, then lurches out of the woods and back to the campfire. Light flickers across his haggard face as he kneels beside the flames. Back in the woods, Curtin lies on the ground. He gingerly raises his left hand to feel a bloody wound in his right shoulder. In the clearing, Dobbs crouches near the fire.
Maybe I didn't kill him. He just staggered and fell down without being hit.
He ignites the end of a stick in the flames, then rises. Holding the makeshift torch in one hand and the gun in the other, he rushes back into the woods. Dobbs steps behind the tree and finds Curtin lying completely still. He bends over the body and waves the torch back and forth above his partner's face. Curtin doesn't move. Dobbs holds out his gun as though preparing to shoot, then draws it back and gets to his feet. Moving backward, he slowly steps away from the body, then stops and eyes the pistol in his hand.
You keep it, it's yours anyhow.
He dumps the gun between Curtin's spread legs, then heads back to the clearing. Dropping the torch, he squats beside the fire and draws his arms around his chest.
Thing in the morning.
He spreads a blanket onto the ground near the flames and lies on top of it.
This fire don't give much heat.
He wraps half the blanket around him. Behind the tree, Curtin stirs.
Conscience. What a thing. If you believe you got a conscience, it'll pester you to death. But if don't believe you got one. What can I do to you? Makes me sick, all this talking and fussing about nonsense.
In the woods, Curtin lifts his head and reaches for his wound. At the campfire, Dobbs rests his head on his arm and shuts his eyes. The flames rise higher and higher, raging before him. Building to a roaring wall of fire, the flames block our view of Dobbs. At the Indian settlement, two dwellers stoke their own fire. Both turn toward the sound, then leap up and grab sickles. Curtin crawls out of the woods on his belly toward them. His shirt is torn, his chest and face smeared with sweat and grime. The men approach. One gently rolls him onto his back.
Nacho, ven a ayudarme.
Help us, Rosenberg.
Ayúdame a llevar la michosa.
Each takes one of Curtin's arms, and they carefully drag him toward the fire. Daytime. Dobbs ties the last pack onto a burro's saddle, then turns toward a boulder. Curtin's fedora rests on top beside a shovel. Dobbs picks them up and heads toward the woods. He takes a few steps, then stops in his tracks.
Maybe I better leave him like he is. Ain't very likely anybody will find him. In a week's time, the buzzards and the ants will have done away with him anyway.
Wheeling around, he realizes it's the burros.
Oh, what's getting into me? It's really a tiger.
He puffs out his chest and strides toward the woods. Stopping again, he knots his brow with concern.
Oh. One of his eyes are open, looking at me. Best thing to do is to get to the railroad in a hurry.
Still gripping the shovel and hat, he turns back toward the burros. He pauses and eyes Curtin's hat, then tosses it away. With an anxious look, he strides up to one of the donkeys and secures the shovel in its pack. Dobbs picks up a stick and pats the animal on its rump. The small herd starts to move out.
It's better not to have buried him. I did right. Yeah. What I should have done, maybe, bury his clothes and leave him to the ants and the buzzards. Buzzards. If somebody saw them circling, they'd know something was dead.
He looks behind him.
Buzzard ain't spotted him yet. Lucky for me.
He pulls the shovel back out and runs toward the woods. Bare trees loom all around. A dry underbrush covers the ground. Weaving around thin trunks, Dobbs approaches the spot where he left Curtin. He finds only an empty patch of dirt, the body gone.
Curtin! Curtin!
Hopping up, he runs farther into the woods.
Curtin!
He pushes aside shrubs to scan the area.
Where are you? Curtin!
Breaking into a panicked run, Dobbs stumbles. He heads back toward the spot and jerks his head from side to side. His eyes are wide and anxious.
I've got to get a hold of myself. I mustn't lose my head. There's one thing certain he ain't here. I got it. The tiger. Yeah, that's it, the tiger. They dragged him off to his lair, that's what. Yeah, pretty soon, not even the bones will be left to tell the story. Done as if by order.
Gripping the shovel, he turns and plods out of the woods. Now at the Indian village. Howard snoozes in a hammock with a hat covering his eyes. Nearby, children splash and play in a pond. A beautiful Indian maiden fans him as another holds up a large piece of fruit. Shaking his head, he holds up his hands. She sets it down, then offers a melon. He takes a bite, hands it back, and uncorks a bottle of tequila. Howard takes a sip, then the maiden squeezes a lemon into his mouth. A man approaches with a caged bird.
Aquí le traigo este perico.
A woman approaches.
Bueno.
She gives him a spotted piglet. Howard examines it, then hands it to the maiden, who puts it with the bird. He takes out a handmade cigarette. She strikes a match and lights it. He studies her with a lusty glance. Breaking into a smile, she strokes his beard. The two men who rescued Curtin come over and respectfully remove their sombreros.
¿Qué dice, amigo?
Pues verá usted, señor doctor. Lázaro, aquí es Carbonero. Oyó algo en la maleza y al fijarse, vi un hombre cubierto de sangre y casi muerto.
¿Cómo es ese hombre?
Pues creo que es uno de sus compañeros.
Está muy malo.
Pistola.
Later, with Curtin.
I came to in the middle of the night. My gun was on the ground beside me. Must have left it there to make it look like suicide.
Howard tends to Curtin's wound.
I figured he'd come back in the morning, see if I still had a flicker of life. Thought about waiting for him and letting him have it then, but there was a good chance in my condition I might miss. So I decided to crawl away like a poisoned dog.
Take it easy, son. You're talking too much.
Don't you worry about me. I'll pull out of this if only to get that guy.
So it appears our fine Mr. Dobbs made off with our goods and is on his way north, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I reckon we can't blame him too much.
What do you mean?
I mean, he's not a real killer as killers go. I think he's as honest as the next fella. Or almost. Yeah, the big mistake was leaving you two fellas out there in the depths of the wilderness with more than 100,000 between you. Quite a big temptation, partner, believe me.
He shot me down in cold blood. After I was down, he shot me a second time just to make sure.
Well, maybe if I'd have been young but out there with either one of you, I might have been tempted, too. Maybe it wouldn't have fallen, but I reckon I sure enough would have been tempted. There now. We're almost as good as new. Now to find that thief and get our goods back. You know you go to Durango. Cabaret turum or fortuna. Presto me un caballo.
Seguro que sí. Y hasta vamos con usted. Para que no le pase lo mismo que a su compañero.
See, not only going to give me a horse, but they're going along with me to protect from any harm. And you ain't gone.
Who says so?
Oh, there's a lot of hard riding to do. You wouldn't be up to it.
You aren't leaving me behind, see?
Look at you. You're weak as a newborn kitten. Don't worry. I'll look after our interests.
I'm going.
Well, I reckon you're gone.
Adios, senora. Gracias.
With a sling around his arm, Curtin nods to the woman who helped nurse him. Later, he rides with Howard and a half dozen Indian men. They stop along the trail, spotting a dead burro, then continue on. Deep in the desert, Dobbs lies on the ground. Panting, he sits up. Dust covers his face and hands. His shirt and pants are dirty and torn.
Burro.
Holding a rope attached to the lead donkey, he rises and staggers forward. After taking a few lurching steps, he stumbles and falls. Dobbs gets back on his feet and trudges onward. Dirt coats his beard and hair. The brim of his filthy, beat-up fedora is ragged and frayed. Swaying with each step, his mouth hangs open. As he makes his way down the trail, the burros amble behind him. Dobbs comes to a stop. Below him, in a ravine, lies a small pool of muddy water. He pushes the burros along, urging them down into the gulch. Clouds of dust swell from their rumps as he pats them. Losing his footing part of the way, he tumbles to the bottom. Dobbs leans over the water's edge and dips his face into the pool. He drinks in great gulps, then takes off his hat and douses his dusty hair, scooping up water with his hands. One of the burros drinks beside him. As he gazes into the rippling water, a man's reflection appears over his shoulder. He seems to be a brown-skinned Mexican with a wide-brimmed sombrero. Dobbs starts, then slowly turns his head to get a better view of the reflection. It's Gold Hat. Rolling onto his back, Dobbs half sits to eye him. The bandit stares down, breaking into a sly half-smile. Two of his compadres sit nearby.
Oiga, amigo, ¿no tiene un cigarro? Have you gotten a cigarette?
Dobbs gets to his feet.
No, I haven't. I got a little tobacco. That'll do.
Bueno. No paper to roll it in?
He gives it to him.
Going to Durango?
Yeah. That's where I'm headed. I gotta sell my burros. I gotta get some money. I haven't got a red cent.
Matches.
With a wary look, Dobbs reaches into his pocket.
Money. We need money, too.
Yeah. I could use a good mule driver. Maybe two or three.
Quiere unos arrieros. How much is the pay?
2 pesos. Because I can't pay in advance, I gotta wait till I get to town so I can get the money.
Hey, did I know you from someplace? Maybe I know you.
No, I don't think so.
Are you alone?
Oh, no. No, I'm not alone. I got a couple of friends coming along on horseback. Yeah, they ought to be here any minute.
Pablo, asómate al camino a ver si ves dos hombres a caballo.
Hey.
Pablo walks to a nearby ridge while Gold Hat squats with his cigarette.
That's funny. A man all by himself in a bandit country with a string of burros. And his friends behind him on a horseback.
Están más lejos de lo que él se cree. Ni siquiera el polvo se divisa.
Your friends must be very far behind you. Pablo cannot see any dogs even from their horses.
They'll be along any minute, I tell you.
Gold Hat's eyes suddenly grow wide. He stands.
I know who you are. You're the guy in the hole. The one who won't give us the rifle.
I ain't never laid eyes on you till now.
What you got on the packs?
The bandit edges toward the burros while the others slink up to Dobbs.
Seems to me like hides.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what they are, hides.
Ought to bring quite a lot of money, huh?
Yeah. Sure you don't want to come along with me and help me with the burros?
As one of the bandits inspects Dobbs' boots, he turns toward the donkeys.
Puro. Puro. Puro.
He starts down the path.
Puro.
Gold Hat blocks his way.
Get away from my burro.
We can sell those burros for just as good as prices you get.
Dobbs pulls his gun.
I tell you. You can frighten even a sick louse with that. You can only shoot one of us. And he wouldn't mind too much because the federales are after him anyway. So what will you call? We'll take the chance.
Get back there.
As the bandits move in closer, Dobbs squeezes the trigger. Pablo hits Dobbs with a rock. Gold Hat pulls out a machete and hacks at his fallen body. The bandits remove his boots as Gold Hat examines Dobbs' revolver. Opening the cylinder, he blows down the barrel. Pablo and the other bandit each hold one of Dobbs' boots. Getting to their feet, they punch and hit one another. Pablo knocks the other man down and pushes him into the water. As Pablo grabs the pair of boots, the donkeys start to run off. The bandits dash after them. Trailing behind, the third bandit pulls on Dobbs' pants. The group dashes across the scrub, catching up to the burro several yards away. Stopping outside of burned-out ruins, they start to untie the hides from the saddles. Gold Hat unstraps 2 bags of gold. As he drops them on the ground, the dust scatters in all directions. He beats the bags with a stick, then kicks them aside. Howard, Curtin, and the Indians continue down the trail. Later, the bandits ride the burros into town. A little later, they head toward the marketplace. The young boy who helped the rancher spies their approach. His mouth set in a tight pout, he follows them with his eyes, then dashes after them. In the center of the market, Gold Hat and the others climb off as potential buyers inspect the animals. The boy weaves around them, lifts a belt on one of the donkey's rumps, and finds its A-shaped brand. He climbs underneath the animal, then sprints toward a nearby building. Meanwhile, the bandits confer with several buyers. The rancher arrives with the boy. The third bandit turns to him, proudly wearing Dobbs' shirt, pants, and fedora. The gray-mustached rancher starts to inspect the animals. Bending over, he notices Dobbs' boots on Pablo's feet. He eyes them for a moment, then rises with a frown. Pablo tips his sombrero to him. Gold Hat addresses the rancher, trying to make a sale. As the third bandit displays one of the hides, a group of villagers surrounds them. Gold Hat anxiously starts to roll a cigarette.
Pues ya hacía mucho que no fumaba de este. Y dígame, ¿y tienen fierro los burros?
The third bandit tries to sneak off. A villager shows him his rifle. As Pablo attempts to slip away, another villager unsheathes his machete. Swaying back and forth, Gold Hat breaks into a nervous grin.
Ah, sí, sabe usted. Es una rueda encina con una raya atravesada. A ver si es cierto.
One of the rancher's men checks a burro's brand. Feigning sudden realization, Gold Hat pats his head.
Ah, qué memoria la mía, hombre. No será por la calor. Usted no conoce el fierro porque estos burros no son suyos. ¿Cómo que no son míos?
No.
Gold Hat reaches for his machete. A villager stops him.
Precisamente eso. ¿A poco no son ustedes los bandidos que asaltaron el tren? Ande, arreando con este.
As the rancher glowers at Gold Hat, villagers drag him and the other bandits to a building. They push them inside, then shut the door. Gold Hat presses his face up to the wooden slats. He spits two times. He spits again. Now, Howard, Curtin, and the Indians ride through the desert, heading into town. In a cemetery, the bandits dig three graves.
Ah, como está haciendo calor.
Como que vamos camino al infierno.
¡Pase ya! Sargento, colóquenlos en su sitio. ¡Vamos afuera! ¡Váyanse ahí!
An officer approaches. The bandits stand up against a wall, hidden from view.
¡En pie!
A Federale firing squad raises its guns.
¡Arriba!
¡Mi subteniente me deja agarrar mi sombrero!
¡Dámelo!
As Gold Hat puts on his sombrero, the officer signals the men. Outside of town.
Shooting.
Wally, execution probably.
Sí, señor. Deben de ser los federales.
Howard, Curtin, and the others ride into town. Back in the cemetery, a breeze blows Gold Hat's sombrero past a freshly dug grave. Outside, the rancher approaches.
Señores, señores, les tengo muy malas noticias. Su compañero fue muerto a sangre fría por tres bandidos.
Dobbs is dead.
What?
Yeah, bandits got him.
Our goods, what about our goods?
¿Dónde están nuestras cosas?
Sus cosas y las pieles están en mi oficina.
What? What?
He says our goods are safe in his office.
Later, in the office.
It's not here, Howard. It's not here.
Keep your shirt on. Keep your shirt on.
Howard stands between the rancher and the boy.
¿Sabe algo sobre unas costaleras? ¿Cómo así? ¿Y muy pesadas?
No, de eso no sé nada.
Ya me acuerdo. ¿Hiciste unos costalitos de lona?
Sí. Sí. ¿Dónde están?
No sé. No los vi. Yo solo sé que lo que dijeron los bandidos.
¿What? ¿What?
care to tell you. You look here, the hair on the gas suckers. I care to tell you.
Dijeron que tenían unos costalitos con arena, que creyeron que eran para que pesaran más las pieles cuando las vendieran.
Said he heard the bandits talking while they were waiting to be shot. Said that they thought it was bags of sand hidden among the hide to make it weigh more when Dobbs went to sell them in Durango.
Where are they?
Sí, ¿dónde están los sacos?
En el convento, por el paredón viejo. Ahí es donde dijeron los bandidos que abrirían la carga.
And the ruins outside town. Come on.
The group walks out and climbs onto their horses. They ride off, heading into the desert. At the ruins, the gold dust lies scattered over the ground. A strong wind starts to sweep it into the air.
Looks like a murder!
As Howard, Curtin, and the Indians gallop over the brush, a cloud of dust swirls all around them. Back at the ruins, an empty sack wafts past. Curtin leads the way, riding faster and faster. The wind continues to kick up gold dust, whirling it through the sky. The cloud grows thicker, forming a heavy veil. The group speeds through it and rides into the ruins. Howard turns to one of the Indians. The fierce wind pounds against their faces, rippling their clothes. Howard and Curtin separate, searching the area. The old man gapes as he steers his horse all around the crumbling ruins. As the wind continues to blow, one of the Indians holds tightly onto his hat to keep it from flying off. One of the men climbs off his horse and picks up an empty sack. Curtin rides over as the man gives Howard the sack. The old prospector examines it, then gets off his horse. His head darts from side to side, searching for more. Another Indian hands him one. As Curtin comes over, Howard clenches both bags, his mouth agape. Curtin stares wide-eyed, a look of stunned disbelief splayed across his face. Howard looks from the bags to Curtin to the bags, then back to his friend. Howard flings the empty sacks away. Curtin squints at him in puzzlement. Howard throws back his head and places his hands on his waist. Curtin turns toward the Indians with a questioning gaze, then looks back at Howard.
Oh, laugh, Curtin, old boy. It's a great joke played on us by the Lord or fate or nature, whatever you prefer. But whoever or whatever played it certainly had a sense of humor. The gold has gone back to where we found it.
Curtin eyes the others, then breaks into a smile.
This is worth 10 months of suffering and labor, this joke is.
They sit on the ground behind a rock wall and turn to each other.
Well, Howard, what next, I wonder?
Well, I'm all fixed as far as I'm concerned as a medicine man. I'll have 3 meals a day, 5 if I want them, roof over my head to drink every now and then to warm me up. I'll be worshipped and fed and treated like a high priest for telling people things they want to hear. Good medicine men are born, not made. Come and see me sometime, my boy. Even you'll take off your hat when you see how respected I am. Why, only day before yesterday, they wanted to make me their legislature, their whole legislature. I don't know what that means, but it must be the highest honor they can bestow. Yeah, I'm all fixed for the rest of my natural life. How about yourself? What do you aim to do?
I haven't got any idea.
Oh, you're young yet. You got plenty of time to make 3 or 4 fortunes for yourself.
You know, the worst ain't so bad when it finally happens. Not half as bad as you figured it'll be before it's happened. I'm no worse off than I was in Tampico. All amounts a couple $100 when you come right down to it. Not very much compared to what Dobbsy lost.
Any special place you've been on going?
Nah. All places are the same to me.
Tell you what.
You can keep my share of what the birds and the hides will bring if you use the money to buy a ticket to Dallas. See Cody's widow. Better than writing. And besides, it's July and the fruit harvest.
He takes out Cody's wallet and holds it out.
How about it?
It's a deal.
Curtin takes it.
Well, let's get going.
Both get to their feet and walk back to the Indians. Curtin stuffs Cody's wallet in the back pocket of his jeans, then climbs onto his horse. Howard mounts his also.
Goodbye, Curtin.
Goodbye, Howard.
Good luck.
Same to you.
Howard and the Indians all head off together. Curtin watches them go for a moment. With a final wave to his friend, Curtin turns in the opposite direction and trots off. His horse steps past a small prickly cactus jutting out of the ground. One of the empty gold dust sacks is wrapped around it, fluttering slightly in the wind. Fade to black. A title reads, The End, a Warner Brothers First National Picture. Cast: Humphrey Bogart as Dobbs, Walter Houston as Howard, Tim Holt as Curtin, Bruce Bennett as Cody, Barton McLean as McCormick, and Alfonso Bedoya as Gold Hat.